The Best Postboy in England by Stephen Frost. An extract. One more letter to go and his first shift would be done. Freddie looked down at the name and address. Mr. and Mrs. Morby, 3 Broad Street, Eagley, Kent. This delivery would be the simplest. Mrs. Morby had taught Freddie when he was at school, and although, like all teachers, she had kept her distance, except, of course, when executing some measure of discipline, she would often smile kindly at him, and so he knew that he was well liked by her. It was because of Mrs. Morby that Freddie could read and write with such ease and skill. Advanced for his age, she had once told his mother. So he thought he would knock to say hello. The Morby's letter looked more formal, the name and address not handwritten but typed, the envelope an unusual hue of cream. Mrs. Morby would be pleased to receive such an important-looking item of post, Freddie thought. So he confidently knocked on his former teacher's door, and whilst he waited for her to open it, he wiggled his shako hat into a straighter, if slightly less comfortable, position. The door could do with a lick of paint, he reckoned, and wondered if black would suit it. He lingered for a while, but after nearly a minute and another knock, he began to doubt she was in. He was on the verge of giving up and just pushing the letter through her letterbox when the door scraped open halfway, with Mrs. Morby's head tilted to one side. For a moment he didn't recognise her because he had expected her to smile in the way she used to do every morning in school. In fact, she looked angry, with the beginnings of a snarl spreading across her mouth. "Morning, Mrs. Morby," said Freddie, unsure but undeterred, and handed her the letter. She took it and stared at the address for several seconds, far longer than seemed necessary or normal. Then Freddie became alarmed as Mrs. Morby's head started to shake as if she were freezing cold, and he wondered if she was coming down with something. She pulled at the letter carelessly, too quickly, tearing the envelope right through the address as if she wanted to destroy it, make it undeliverable. He was surprised, however, to see the letter itself had survived the assault, and she shakily flicked it open, like the striking of a match, and began to read. But she only studied it for a few seconds before looking straight at Freddie and screamed with her mouth so wide open he could see the many gaps in her teeth, all the way to the back. The waft of her breath swept across his face with a smell that reminded him of a ploughed field, and when her lungs were empty, she breathed in and screamed again, her face going red and the veins in her neck bulging so gruesomely that Freddie imagined they might burst and squirt blood over his new uniform. Then she screamed for a third time, scrunching up the letter to put it to her face, where the noise she made changed to a wail, a fathomless moan which Freddie instinctively understood to be her calling out for help that would never come. She fell to her knees and leant forward until her forehead touched Freddie's shoes. Instinctively he retreated half a step as she rocked back and forth, her moaning muffled by the letter she had cupped around her mouth. Flustered and hesitant, Freddie looked from left to right, expecting to see Mrs. Morby's neighbours arriving with a helping hand, but none came, although he thought he caught the flicker of a net curtain being pulled at by a plump grey hand. Then Mrs. Morby fell on her side, except no, it was more than that. She had thrown herself there, deliberately, her head hitting the cobbles with a crack. The sickening noise of it summoned the trace of a memory of when he was 7 or 8 years old and on his way back home from picking apples, or stealing them, if truth be told, though his mother had simply told him to go and find some cookers. Freddie had witnessed the shooting of a horse. 4 people gathered around the poor animal, a man who held the bridle, a second man who held the gun, and a woman who was hugging her young daughter to her chest. The little girl was crying and looking up at her mother, who stroked her daughter's hair. Freddy was watching this somber tableau from behind a hedgerow at the side of the field. And although he wasn't exactly hiding, neither did he wish to be seen for fear of disturbing them. He watched the man with the gun put a bullet in its chamber and then immediately place it against the horse's forehead. What seemed odd to Freddy was that the horse didn't flinch, even though of course he knew the creature was not capable of understanding what was about to happen. In the final second before the shooting, the horse was as it had always been, and always would be, simply and permanently alive in a split second of existence, an eternal present. It was this taking away of innocence that made the execution seem like such a terrible act of betrayal. As Freddy looked down at Mrs. Morby, he thought of the horse collapsing to the crack of the gun and the pointless thud as it hit the ground. Surely the neighbours would come out soon. If they didn't, Mrs. Morby would continue to wail forever and Freddy would be late back for his shift. He looked from left to right again and, to his relief, heard the click of a door being opened. An older woman, who Freddy knew to be Mrs. Hope, stepped out from her house next door and leant down to put one hand on Mrs. Morby's shoulder, the other to tend to her badly grazed cheekbone, then looked up at Freddy. "Why are you hanging about? You've done what you came to do." Freddy blushed, suddenly feeling tears rush upon him, and realised he would have to walk away in order to hide them. But he found himself remaining for a moment longer, trying to recall a postscript that George had given him, a line he didn't understand at the time, but which now seemed clear.
"Sometimes they catch your eye and wish they were dead. Or wish you were. But you don't worry about that. You just do your job. You can't change the message."
Mrs. Hope looked up at Freddy again and said, "Well?" "Ma'am," nodded Freddy as he blinked away the wetness, climbed on his bike and pedalled off to the end of his very first morning shift, complete, ahead of time, job done. Then a cloud passed across the face of the sun and Freddy was alone, without so much as his own shadow to accompany him home.